On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to answer these questions. What makes Wemby truly one of one so far this season? And can the Spurs really maintain the momentum of their 4-0 start? Plus, we preview the Emirates NBA Cup. All this coming up right now. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to The Big Number. 1 week in of the NBA season. That's your man, our man, Dan Devine. Dan, what's going on, man?
Tom, I am doing great. I'm excited. I'm feeling like we're getting into the rhythm of things now, you know, like the game watching, writing, breaking down, analyzing, talking schedule. It's kind of coalescing a little bit, and I'm feeling pretty good about it. So without any further ado, Tom, I'm excited to put up some numbers. Hit me with it. What is this week's big number?
All right, here we go. This week's big number, Dan, is one. As in, there's only one player in NBA history who has averaged at least 30 points, 12-plus rebounds, 4-plus blocks, and a three-pointer to start the season over four
games.
Wait
a second.
We've never seen this before.
The blocks and the threes makes me think I know who we're talking about. It's Ariel Hakporti, right?
Wow, you did it. Wow, look at this. It's actually another alien. It's Victor Wembanyama, Dan.
And I was close.
I'm going to hit you with this other stat. You know how I just said that it was the first player to average 30, 12, 4, and 3 to start the season?
Mm-hmm.
How about any four-game stretch in NBA history? It's still Victor Wembanyama.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah. Like, I did that search over at Stathead, and I was like, let's just see how many players have done this to start the season. Is average 30, 12, 4, and 1. So 30 plus points, 12 plus rebounds, 4 plus blocks, and 1 three-pointer. And then I did it for the first four games of the season. And then I was like, oh, it's just Victor Wembanyama. That's my big number this week. And then I was like, oh, what if I could just do for any four-game stretch? And voila. The Frenchman is the only one there. So the way I did this was I looked at all the players over the first four games who have averaged at least 30 points a game. There's 73 players all time that have averaged at least 30 points per game in the first four games. Then you add in the variable of 12-plus rebounds, okay? There's 20 of those players, all right? Then you add in 4-plus blocks into that, and it whittles down even further to just three players. And those three players, Dan, Victor Wembanyama, Patrick Ewing, and Hakeem Olajuwon.
Okay? I mean, a legitimately very big three.
Yes. And then when you add in the three-pointers, it's just Wemby, okay?
Man.
So I guess you could argue that if Hakeem and Patrick played in this era, maybe you'd see them have a three-pointer, you know?
Hakeem, average definitely. Three-pointer.
You know that they could stretch a little bit. But we've never seen anything like this. And last year, Dan, remember we did a big number about one. It was the same number, same player, where there was only one player to average at least three blocks and three-pointers, and it was Wemby. And if we can pull this up, Dan, our last year, how this went down when we talked about this in December, how we sounded. Is this the optimal usage of Victor Wembanyama offensively? Yeah. Because we did on the Kevin O'Connor show earlier, I lambasted Victor Wembanyama just about how his average distance, his shot distance was like 18 feet away from the basket. And that can't be. Where you have a 7'5" guy spend most of his time is beyond the arc. But then promptly after that, Wemby went on this like rampage, like absolute peak Steph Curry flame throwing sessions for five games. And it just made me again look like a genius for saying he shouldn't shoot threes when he shot 41% on like 15 attempts per game. Yeah. Yeah. I guess we're both right there. It's like, you know, hey, maybe don't shoot that many threes and also play closer to the basket. And then he made me look like an idiot last year for that 5-game stretch. But damn, my MVP pick this year was predicated on Wemby continuing to play around the paint. I said there was 13 post-ups, led the preseason with the number of post-ups. I noted how different he was playing. His orientation was way closer to the basket. And now we're seeing, damn, this season, that average shot distance last season was at 17 feet from the basket, and this year it's at 9.4. Dan, the preseason stuff has continued, and now we're reaching what I think to be the greatest 4-game sample statistically that we have seen to start a season. And Wemby is 21 years old.
It's unreal.
Dude.
Yeah, it's ridiculous to watch him and feel like none of this seems super unsustainable, right? Like, he's the part where it would be one thing, you know, that 5-game stretch where he's shooting like Steph Curry, that's one thing. This is all, I don't attempt a shot further than 10 feet away if I don't have to. I'm like, his standing reach is already like 9'7 or 9'8. He's like within arm's reach of the basket on all of these shots. And the variety of ways he's getting it, where it's, you know, parking him at the elbow, it's power, giving, you know, low post shots, you know, those sort of like Dirk Embiid post-ups at the nail where he's facing up, running him out of off of pin downs in the corner, like catching, like he's Kyle Korver coming out of the corner, but then like going around and getting those touches and curling in. It just looks so natural and effortless and easy. And so, yeah, like, if you told me a 7'5" guy was going to shoot 65% inside the paint or whatever, I'd say like, yeah, that makes sense. And then if you told me he was going to get 20 of those a game or whatever, 18 of them a game, and he was going to score 30 points, I'd say, oh yeah, that makes sense too. And so, yeah, all of this does feel really pretty, you know, sustainable to me. Am I nuts to think that?
No, I'm watching these highlights that Emmy's running here, and every play is so bonkers. Like, everything he does is so bonkers for like a 6'5" guy, and he's listed at 7'5" or 7'4". I think he's 7'7". I don't need to beat a dead horse there. But the whole point is, Dan, I think this summer and everything he did this summer after his DVT procedure to fix that, and then he said time and time again that he's not taking this stuff for granted. And after having that condition last year, kind of click things into focus of like what he needs to do. And those numbers, 40, 15, and 3, you're going through all the stats and you're like, man, that's crazy. What we haven't mentioned is that he's averaging 1.5 turnovers a game. Dan, during the preseason, he was throwing the ball all over the place and turning the ball over like crazy. And I remember talking to someone on the Spurs, and he was like, yeah, he's just trying some weird stuff out in the preseason, but he'll lock in for regular season. And he has. Like, a couple games with zero turnovers? And he had a game where he didn't take a single three-pointer. So, like, he's just stretching the limits of what's possible. And I think last year, I might have been a little early saying he was MVP. But this year, I kind of feel like if he keeps anywhere near this, and again, 30-12-4-1 has never been done in a 4-game stretch, but he's even higher than that. He's at 31-14-5-1. Like, I'm dialing the sliders down to get to he's the only player to do that. And he's way higher in his actual numbers. So I think, like, what I'm trying to figure out, Dan, is, like, are we going to see, like, this is the worst he's going to be this season? Or our defense is going to be able to figure him out in some ways. And I don't know. What's the most impressive thing from Wemby this year for you? Because there's so much to choose from.
Yeah. Well, so first off, listeners, if you have not heard a couple episodes ago when Tom kind of made his case for why the MVP push for Wemby was coming, I invite you to go back in the feed, check that out on the big number. My pumping the brakes on that was only really predicated on, are the Spurs going to be good enough to win enough games to get you into that kind of conversation? And also, we exist in a time of monsters, and then, you know, SGA and Jokic and Giannis and Luka are all going to be accounted for too. And those guys are also off to bonkers starts to the season. So, you know, more will be revealed there. And so this is the Spurs, sort of, they're as good as they expected themselves to be. And that Wembanyama, you know, we've seen those first few games, like the absolutely bonkers stat lines. I wrote about this at Yahoo Sports after the Monday win over the Raptors. It's almost the quieter way to just end a game, that he came out and completely controlled that game on the defensive end, even without blocking a shot. He controlled that game as an offensive force while only taking two shots in the first half. Like, just his presence, the ability to dissuade drivers from even trying to get that extra dribble into the paint, forcing everything to be like a floater range shot or an out of rhythm three-pointer late in the clock. The attention he draws that opens up the driving lanes for Stephon Castle and for Dylan Harper and for the rest of those teammates. Like, it's just the command for a 21-year-old is absolutely bonkers to be able to see him exerting that influence, even when it's not a play for him, or he's not actively blocking the shot, grabbing the steal and pushing down the other end. And so if you've got a guy who can be that number one option on offense, who can be the centerpiece of your defense, and who is that rising tide that lifts all boats sort of around, I think the question that's most interesting to me is, like, as you mentioned, it's not just is this like the worst he's going to be and he's going to get better? Are the Spurs already good enough to make that kind of leap that I was skeptical about, where it's not just you're slugging it out in the 6-7-8 range, you're actually really a meaningful contender for home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs? It's possible. I mean, it's still very early and there's some caveats we can talk about, but my takeaway from this opening week for them is they might be a more complete and like capable team on both ends of the court than I thought they would be right off the gun.
Yeah. Yeah. He's one of these players that, like, just his very presence, it's similar to like Steph Curry offensively, Dan, is how he doesn't have to have the ball to totally disrupt the opposing defense, right? Wemby doesn't have to block a shot. He just needs to be on the floor to have people so scared of this guy, right? So he's like a Steph. The gravity of Wemby on defense is the same gravity of Steph offensively, where he doesn't have to even raise his hand up. The fact that he's doing decoy, have you seen this where he's playing possum defensively and he's kind of bending over and hiding behind somebody, and then he's luring. He's like the Venus flytrap where he's luring the other, the opposing ball handler to like try a shot. Like, he has to crouch over. Have we seen that before, where a defender is like in a crouch just to like lure the shooter to shoot? It's absurd what he's doing.
Yeah, it's Grand Theft Alvarado for blocking shots with a 7-foot infinity guy. Like, that's kind of, it's pretty tricky. And I have to give a shout out. The first person I saw notice that was erstwhile super producer John Gennaro. He's the one that let me know about that. Like, he's crouching down to try to hide. And I was like, that's insane. That's preposterous.
Shouts to
John.
Yeah.
A couple of numbers very quickly on that aura, that impact, the defensive influence. So opponents are shooting 44.8% against Wembanyama at the rim. That's ridiculous. That would be at or near the top of the league in every season. Obviously, we got our small sample caveats. If you're listening to this show, chances are you're aware that four games is not a statistically significant sample, but we have to say it, right? We'll say it out loud. When he's on the floor, 27% of Spurs opponents' shots are coming at the basket. That's like, you know, barely a quarter of their shots come at the rim. Again, that would rank at or near the top of the league in every season. With him on the floor, opponents are scoring 73.6 points per 100 half-court plays. The absolute worst half-court offenses of the last decade were around like 86, 87, 88. So again, these are small samples, and the half-court number, courtesy of our friends at Cleaning the Glass. But what we are seeing is, by virtue of him just being there, he is effectively dismantling opposing offenses and forcing them to do things that are bad and that they shouldn't do, and miss things and throw the ball away and generally just short circuit. And I can't blame them, because if I had to try to figure out how to score around that guy, I think I might, you know, just sort of short circuit myself.
Yeah. Yeah. That's such a good stat. I got a couple more for you. You ready?
I would love them.
All right. Here we go. He has blocked 11% of corner threes while on the floor.
You almost got like a spit take. I had my coffee here. I almost legitimately spit off that way. 11%
of corner threes while he's on the floor. like,
come on.
It's not 11% of corner threes of the guys he's guarding. It's just 11. He's got two corner three blocks already, and there have only been 19 taken while he's on the floor. So ipso facto, 11% of the corner threes that have been taken while he's on the floor have been swatted away by the center. I think this was the one against Dallas where he went all KD plus Kyrie, like in the same kind of motion. All right, I'm going to give you another one here, Dan. When Wemby is on the floor, the opposing offense is shooting their two-point shots 8 feet away from the basket. Okay, so two-pointers, opposing offense are shooting on average 8 feet away from the basket. When he's off the floor, Wemby's off the floor, the opposing offense is moving closer to the basket by two whole feet. So 25% closer to the basket on twos, goes from 8 feet when he's on the floor to 6 feet on average when he's off the floor. So your numbers, the numbers that I'm giving you, it's all pointing to the same direction. These are like phantom blocks, you know? They're like when he is nearby, he's not blocking the shot, but he might as well be, because he's deterring a shot around the basket. They're going into the paint, seeing a lurking, crouching Wemby. Doesn't even have to have his hands up. And they're like, yeah, business decision. I'm getting the F out of here. And so this is just like, this is, I mean, we've seen Dwight. We've seen Yao. We've seen Rudy Gobert. We haven't seen anything like this. And the fact that he's doing all of these amazing dribble sequences behind the back, it's, offensively, like he's got what, 6 turnovers and 130 points. What is going on? Like I'm serious. Like what? All right, you know what? We gotta get into the B block here, because we got 4 little numbers. I know we're gonna analyze what this means for the NBA and what this means for the Spurs. Is kind of like, how does Wemby's ascension to being the MVP of the early going just change the landscape for everybody? So we're going to go 4 little numbers here after the break. But before we do, I want to let you guys know, got a new little thing over here at Yahoo. Just a reminder that right now in the Yahoo Fantasy app, you can draft a new league in Yahoo's newest fantasy basketball format. It's called High Score. It's a clean, simplified, brand new format where you draft 10 players. You start 6. And set your lineup only once per week. Just set it and forget it, Dan. High Score takes only your starters' best single games from the week as you go head-to-head against one of your league mates. And the NBA season is only a few games in. It's early. So draft a team on High Score today in the Yahoo Fantasy app or at yahoofantasy.com. That's High Score. Go check it out. All right, big number this week is 1. That is the number of players in NBA history, or I should say since 1984, according to our friends at stathead.com, there's only one player to average at least 30, 12, 4, and 1 in any 4-game stretch. And he's doing it to start the season. All right, Dan, hit me some little numbers here to kind of further explain what we're seeing from the Spurs and Wemby this year.
Yeah, so the framing here was basically, what does the 4-0 start for San Antonio? First time they've started 4-0 in, I think, since 2017. What does that mean for their status in the league, right? Or how real is this? Are they a real contender? What do we think about that? So our first little number is 0.133, or 13.3%. That is the collective winning percentage of the Spurs' first 4 opponents in the 2025-26 NBA season. The Dallas Mavericks, New Orleans Pelicans, Brooklyn Nets, and Toronto Raptors all enter Wednesday's action a combined 2-13 on the season. If that sounds bad, it's because it is. The softest opening slate in the league thus far, according to just about any strength of schedule metric that you can find. And there's a bit of a double-edged sword to that, right? Like, they're 2-13, but 4 of those losses are to the Spurs. And if we're arguing the Spurs are good, like, they, you know, yeah, maybe it's they because they're getting beat up by a good team. But the fact that I think no one expected the Nets to be very good, and the Mavs are without Kyrie Irving, and the Pelicans, lots of questions about what's going on there, and the Raptors, similarly, lots of questions about what that team should look like. maybe colors the analysis a little bit, especially when you consider they needed OT to put away the Pels, and they blew a 26-point lead against the Nets, and they were pretty rough for most of the second half against the Raptors. So how do you see it, Tom? Is this more that the Spurs are kicking ass because they're just a kick-ass team, or because they've faced some exceptionally kickable asses through these first four games?
Yeah, I think you're seeing a very young team led by a very young player feel out the season with some very new players and teammates, like Dylan Harper, rookie, Luke Kornet, newcomer. De'Aaron Fox hasn't played yet. Kelly Olynyk hasn't played yet. Where you're looking at these guys who are trying to integrate this this new lineup and this new roster. And by the way, Mitch Johnson, it's his first time being a full-time head coach, coming in as an interim head coach, filling in for the legend Greg Popovich mid-season last season. Has a full training camp, and they still don't have all their pieces yet. So I think when you're looking at the 4-0 record, that's great. And the 133 win percentage, as you pointed out, when at least one of those games are against Wemby, you're going to have a poor win percentage. But things will kind of level out here. On Thursday night, they're going to be facing the red-hot Miami Heat, who have been one of the great surprises, if not the biggest surprise of the season. The way their offense has looked, the way that they get up and down the floor, they're not using pick and rolls nearly as much. Eric Spoelstra continuing to evolve, just like Greg Popovich, the aforementioned Greg Popovich, former Team USA head coach Greg Popovich, future head coach Team USA Eric Spoelstra. They're always able to adapt. And so I can't wait to watch Thursday night's game between the Heat and the Spurs, which is not a sentence that I think a lot of us were saying in preseason, is can't wait for San Antonio, Miami on a Thursday night. But that's a team that has looked awesome in the early going, getting off to a 3-1 start. So if I've got league pass and I'm at home and I want to watch like a low key, really interesting game on Thursday night, flip over to San Antonio, Miami, because these two teams are playing way more dynamic basketball than they did last year. And the Heat are down Tyler Hero, the Spurs are down De'Aaron Fox, and they don't seem to worry at all.
Well, we'll know that Mitch Johnson is a Popovich level troll if he goes into this Heat Spurs game by sending like Wemby and Castle and Dylan Harper and everybody like flying them home before the game, like in the Greg
Popovich. Where's Boris Diaw when you need him? You know,
I mean, I ask that question multiple times a week, every week, personally, but that's just me. That's just how I get down. Our second little number this week, you mentioned the absence of De'Aaron Fox, kind of relates to that. Second little number is +20.5. That's the net rating of the Spurs starting five of Victor Wembanyama, Stephon Castle, Devin Vassell, Harrison Barnes, and Julian Champagne, according to Cleaning the Glass. That quintet has started all four San Antonio wins. They're scoring at a near top 10 rate. They're defending, as we just mentioned with Vic, at a rate that would lead the league by a mile. Vassell, Barnes, and Champagne are all shooting the ball great from downtown, which is providing that floor spacing for Castle to get downhill and for Vic to live by the basket. The size across the perimeter positions, all four of those dudes are like at least 6'5 with a 6'9 wingspan, means they can kind of switch everything. They can hand off responsibilities. It's a lot of limbs in the passing lanes. It's creating a lot of chaos. It's looked good. It's made a lot of sense. And so I'm just wondering, like, what do you think about the way the pieces all fit together? And like, what do you think Mitch Johnson does when De'Aaron Fox is ready to go, which apparently might be on the way pretty soon?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a really difficult decision for him to make, because Castle's looked really good. He's got to knock down his turnovers a little bit, and his decision-making can be improved a little bit. But that's when you're talking about is he 21 this season? So he'll probably slip into Steph Castle's spot. Then you got Dylan Harper, super sub, and Castle, which is a good problem to have. I'll just note that I think those 3-point percentages that you mentioned there in that starting lineup from Champagne and Harrison Barnes and Vassell, I think that's a direct correlation of Victor Wembanyama causing so much havoc in the paint. You know, like, I've watched so many times where they're single coverage on Wemby and he's just like mouse in the house. By the way, mouse in the house is usually for guys who are like 6'3 and under. I think mouse in the house for Wemby is like 6'9 and under, where he's just like, yeah, I'm going to beat you down. I'm going to throw my shoulder in you and you're not going to be able to do anything. So what did the defense do? They got to collapse. They got to send multiple help defenders to try to wall off any sort of entry pass to Wemby, which is damn near impossible these days. And I just think that the 3-point percentage from last season where Wemby's camping out at the 3-point line. You're not getting that same attention to Wemby that draws all the defenders into the paint and sucks them down. And so what you see is Vassell, Barnes, everybody else is reaping the benefits of all that attention, sucking down into Wemby's zone there in the paint. And so those shooting percentages I expect to be better because Wemby is shooting 83% inside 3 feet this season. 83%. So every time he gets the ball down there, it's a bucket. 1.7 points every time he gets the ball around the basket. So if you're a defense, you've got to send multiple defenders. And those shooters around, we've been wondering, do the Spurs have enough three-point shooting, spacing, respect at the three-point line in order for them to hit that 50-win plateau, that threshold? And I think maybe the answer was yes all along if Wemby draws all that attention down to the paint and gets that attention that a 7'7" guy deserves.
Yeah. It creates way more open shots. I think the interesting question, you mentioned right away, like maybe does Castle become a super sub there? I wonder if he's looked so good in the early going outside of the turnovers that he stays put. And we're talking about, is it Barnes or Champagne that goes to the bench? And then you're a little bit smaller in the front court, but that's a good thing. You have the 7'7" guy behind you. And, what does that mean for sort of the overall ecosystem remains to be seen. Mitch Johnson had a good quote on this. This is courtesy of Tom Orsborn at the San Antonio Express News on the Spurs beat there. Quote, I think we've seen this and discussed this here for a couple of years now. We won't be concerned or disappointed with trying to figure out how to play good players together. Some of this stuff's going to take time. We'll figure it out. It may take some time. May have some growing together. So yeah, again, one of them good problems to have as far as the way that the starting lineup's going to shake out. Our third little number this week is 1.40. That's how many points per play the Spurs are scoring in transition so far this season. That's fifth in the NBA behind only number one, Utah Jazz, just as we all projected heading into the season, the Oklahoma City Thunder, Philadelphia 76ers, and Charlotte Hornets. Nearly 19% of the Spurs' offensive possessions so far have come on the break, also fifth in the NBA. It's kind of wild that they're hitting the gas this much, despite being orienting everything around a guy who's the size of a cell phone tower. But how reasonable and feasible do you think this is as a pathway to points for them moving forward? Are they going to have to slow things down as they get some more of those big guys into the lineup, or is Wemby just ready to run?
I think it's twofold. I think they have a new up-tempo offense under Mitch Johnson that wants to get up and down the floor. But as I'm doing these broadcasts for the Blazers, they're totally different than last year because they're using those turnovers to create offensive opportunities. The defense, good defense is good offense oftentimes. Sure. And when Wemby is discouraging these shots, deterring these shots, and they get those defensive rebounds, they're going. When he gets those blocks, steals, they're going. And that, I think, is one in the same, is that when you have a great defense that forces these bad shots that hit the front of the rim and then kind of bounce away, and then you almost like it's a steal going the other way, even though it's just a missed shot. And Wemby is not a center that needs to hit an outlet pass to his point guard. He can just go. And we've seen so many of the highlights this season is when he's creating these circus dribbles and magic with the ball. And when you have a guy who's able to block five shots a game, who's also a one-man wrecking ball in the open court, then yeah, you're going to want to play up-tempo. It all comes back to me, Dan, as long as he stays healthy, this is a 50-win team. If he's playing like this, he's staying healthy. He's that good both ends of the floor that I think when he is this tower of terror, both ends of the floor, that's a 50-win outfit. As long as he stays healthy and that up-tempo speed that you're talking about, that kind of get out and transition, that's good in October, but it's going to be tougher to do that at that size in February and March. And that's what is going to be like the big the lens on this team and every team that gets out going fast, including the Blazers in the early going, how sustainable is that? And will we see that continue as we go deeper into the season and the dog days of the NBA schedule hit?
I think it's a really good point you make as far as the ability to defensive rebound, like the, and it's maybe something that's been an under-discussed aspect of the Wemby getting stronger and off-season workout kind of component. Like, if you are able to dominate the defensive glass more, like you end possessions, you are able to get out on the break more. Last season, the Spurs finished 26th in defensive rebounding rate. So far, they are third. And Victor Wembanyama is leading the NBA in defensive rebounding rate. He's pulling in nearly 40% of opponents' misses when he's on the court. So like that is a complete overhaul in terms of what you can do to get out and get up tempo there. And speaking of up tempo, somebody that's benefited and been a driver of some of that cause, our fourth and final little number this week is 14.2. That's how many drives to the basket Dylan Harper is averaging per 36 minutes of floor time thus far this season, according to Second Spectrum Tracking. 14.2 per 36. That's not like a top of the league type number. For context, last season, SGA, who's our number one driver in the NBA, 21.7 drives per 36. Trae Young, also up near the top of that ranking, 17.1 drives per 36. James Harden, obviously a little bit further on in his career, but still a real downhill threat, 15.1 drives per 36. So 14.2 is not like upper echelon in the league, but it is high, and it's as much as or more than anyone that was on the Spurs roster last season. De'Aaron Fox was right around 14.2 after he came over at the trade deadline, but they did not have a whole lot of rim pressure last season. And now you've got the, you know, we haven't had Fox yet, but you've seen Harper getting downhill more. You've seen Wemby, obviously, as you mentioned, being closer to the basket more, with the driving lanes being wider, Stephon Castle getting downhill more. Dylan Harper, about 2/3 of his field goal attempts are coming at the rim. He's not finishing them great yet, but he's getting there. And just went back and watched all his assists this morning. About 1/3 of those, if not more, are like him getting into the paint, 2 feet in the paint, driving and kicking. So that was like what he was a star at Rutgers. And it's translating already through four games to the NBA, averaging just about 15, 5, and 5 in 26 minutes off the bench. What does that kind of downhill driving game do for this Spurs offense, Tom? And just your initial impressions of what you've seen out of Dylan Harper.
I love Dylan Harper coming out of the draft. I loved his game. I saw a lot of James Harden. And so far, man, it is James Harden 2.0. What I'm seeing.
It really does look like it. Yeah.
You know, like it is just he's got this innate ability to finish in traffic and makes the smart play. His turnover assist to turnover ratio is very strong for someone who's, you know, at his age. And I just think that we probably underestimated his ability to impact the game right away. I keep harping on this, I keep harping on this is that you, as a second gen player, there's just this thing. Jalen Brunson's the same way, where it's just these guys are, I don't know, they've got this basketball IQ that it just seems like they are way ahead of the game early on in their careers. And Dylan Harper is showing a lot of the same characteristics that a lot of second gen guys have, which is they just know how to hoop. I know that sounds really like simplistic and boiling it down to just like a very cliche response, but like he just knows how to hoop. He's got a lot of great feel to his game. Yeah, his tempo is excellent. His size, we know, is already for his skill set is elite. And you see it there, the Brooklyn game, zero turnovers in a game in which he just started in this league. And De'Aaron Fox is going to be a downhill force for them. And I thought maybe you'd be the only real downhill force for them at a high level. But we're seeing with Steph Castle and with Dylan Harper is they're going to be a handful. And as soon as you turn your attention away from Wemby and you start respecting that drive from Dylan Harper, and they're already doing this, Dylan Harper's just going to throw the lob. You know, he's just going to throw it in the air. And whether it's Wemby or Luke Kornet, this is all going to be so impossible to guard. If it's this hard to guard right now in October, just imagine in February and March when they start gelling together.
Yeah, there's a lot to like. I think the size, the physicality, really, as you mentioned, just jumps off the page. Like finishing through contact, not just the ability to get to the rim, but the ability to, you know, consort, find the angle to get the ball on the rim. And then they've been so good offensive rebounding. If you're playing Wemby, you're playing Kornet, you're getting guys who they're crashing with Castle coming out of the corner. Like you're going to generate better looks by being closer to the basket. And it's something that Mitch Johnson said in preseason. We'll get out of here on this. The idea that like this is going to be a team built in sort of as a reflection of Victor Wembanyama. And I think my first thought on that was, oh, that means, you know, we're going to be a defense first team. We're going to be a great defensive team. And sure, you know, positional size everywhere, length, we're going to be able to create turnovers, get you late into the clock, make you uncomfortable. And that's the starting point for everything, right? The case for this being a 50-win team, for being a top flight playoff contender is we are a top five, top three defense. And that makes sense. But all of that offseason work for Wembanyama, the physicality, the building his body, working with KG, working with the Dream, that's also about we need to be a more physical offense and a more versatile offense. How do we get to the rim? How do we create higher quality looks? Harper's ability to get into the paint, to suck in the defense, to spray out. It's what every coach is looking for. They want you to get downhill. They want you to command a double. They want you to be able to play off 2 feet and either score for yourself or create a shot. He looks immediately at age 19, 4 games in, NBA body, NBA feel, able to do that. And you just start adding up guys that have those skill sets, putting them around Victor Wembanyama. Things can get awful scary, awful fast.
Man. No De'Aaron Fox so far, no Kelly Olynyk so far, just 2 games from Luke Kornet and no Sochan. So, you know, we're going to temper our expectations a little bit because of that strength of schedule that you pointed out, the first little number. They've had the easiest strength of schedule on both ends of the floor, not just in terms of record, but, you know, the offensive ratings and defensive ratings, according to dunksandthrees.com. It has been a very soft schedule to begin with, but a lot of that is pre-baked in because they're playing Wemby. So great, great stuff there, Dan. We're going to talk about, hey, Friday, the opening games of group play. We're seeing the NBA Emirates Cup begin on Friday. We're going to talk about the slate of games that we have here this week and also which groups are the toughest regions to come out of. Because of these, the Spurs in particular being this good this early makes things a little bit more spicy in terms of the NBA Cup. So we're going to talk about that with our picks coming up right up after the break. All right, enough about Wemby and Dylan Harper and Luke Kornet. Let's talk about the Emirates NBA Cup 2025. Dan, fire up! We got Friday. Group play begins. Blazers, Nuggets. I'm going to be on that call on the Blazers side. I can't wait. A little foreshadow here is a bit of a gauntlet that the Blazers are facing here in their grouping. So, Dan, what is the Emirates NBA Cup and what can we expect here on Friday as we kick things off?
All right. So 2 years ago, you heard about this called the in-season tournament. It became the NBA Cup last season. And so we're entering the third iteration of this competition. The entire 30-team league is split up into 6 different groups, 5 teams apiece. There's 3 West groups. There's 3 East groups. Everybody in the group plays each other twice, round robin format, 2 home games, 2 away games. That's the group stage of the competition. You're going to be looking for this on Friday nights. So on a Friday nights, the next 4 Friday nights, starting with Halloween, the next 4 Friday nights after that, every game is an NBA Cup game. Once we get to Thanksgiving week, that was the 21st, November 21st, there will be group play on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. So we're going to like wrap up that week, and that's going to determine which teams advance out of group play and into the knockout round, quarterfinals, semifinals, finals. You're going to have 8 teams, 6 group winners, and 2 wild cards that are determined by the head-to-head record in the tiebreakers. There's going to be also your point differential. This has been the big thing over the course of the first couple of years. Our team's running up the score, yes, but they're also they're benefiting from that because point differential and total points scored are 2 of the main tiebreakers for determining if you get out of round 1 and into round 2. So there's incentive to stick around all the way to the end and to score as many points as possible if you want to have the chance at advancing in the NBA Cup tournament. Quarterfinals start on Wednesday, December 10th. Then on to Las Vegas for the semifinals and finals. Semifinals on the Saturday, December 13th. Finals on Tuesday, December 16th. It all kicks off this Friday. Actually, I had an editor once yell at me about saying kickoff with basketball. It all tips off this Friday. Tom's going to be on the call for Blazers Nuggets. We're also going to have Hawks, Pacers, Celtics, Sixers, Raptors, Cavs, Knicks, Bulls, Lakers, Grizzlies, Jazz, Suns, and Pelicans, Clippers. So full slate of games. You're going to want to be paying attention primarily to Prime Video for this one or your League Pass feed for your local broadcast. But yeah, we're getting going Halloween night and it's a sprint to Vegas from here.
That was a nice job, Dan. That was an incredible Terrific. Way to go,
I've maybe had to do these sorts of table setters a couple times by now. So I'm getting better at it. I'm not all the way there, but I'm getting better at it.
I hope the winner this year like actually celebrates rather than Giannis last year where he was like, yeah, this we're not going to celebrate. We're going to leave the champagne into the ice bucket because we got bigger things that we want to achieve this year. Let's celebrate it. I want people to get excited for it. If the players get excited for it, then the fans will get excited for it. So I want to see, and we know that Giannis is very competitive, uber competitive, and he shows that by winning the NBA Cup and an NBA championship. But I do want to see a little bit more celebration, a little bit more prestige, pageantry around the NBA Cup. And we already got the courts, but we're already bringing back pageantry in a big way. The Basketball Illuminati, we talk about this with Nate Jones, our friend Nate Jones, on the pod. It was wet. This season, we're bringing back the pageantry, and I want players to embrace this and also celebrate when they win the NBA Cup. The groups, East A, Cleveland, Indiana, Atlanta, Toronto, Washington. Yikes. Okay, that is a combined win percentage so far this season of 316. They are 6-13. East B, Boston, Detroit, Orlando, Brooklyn, Philly. Remember, at the winner of the group play will get an automatic qualifying for the next round. And then there's going to be a wild card team that makes it in as the best record of the teams that didn't make it in and clinching their group. So East B is Boston, Detroit, Orlando, Brooklyn, Philly. East C is New York, Milwaukee, Chicago, Miami, Charlotte. By far the strongest group so far this season, with Miami and Chicago jumping out of the gates. West A is OKC, Minnesota, Sacramento, Phoenix, and Utah. West B, the LA teams, Memphis, Dallas, and New Orleans. West C, we're going Houston, Denver, Golden State, Portland, and San Antonio. Yo! Oh, Houston, man, is the worst quote-unquote team in that group, off to a 1-2 start. And then you got Portland that just walloped the Golden State Warriors. The only loss for the Warriors this season is to Portland, who's also in this group. Warriors look like a top title contender. And then you got Wemby and then Jokic all in the same group. Damn, that's got to be the hardest group, right, of all of these to come out of?
Yeah, I don't think it's particularly close. You know, you're looking at, I think, three pretty strong contenders to come out of the West. And then if we're including the Spurs in there, four. And then the Blazers, for everything that's going on with their offense, they continue to be a dynamic defensive team. That is going to be, that's a pretty brutal gauntlet there. But I mean, if nothing else, you're going to be seeing some entertaining games as you watch them.
Yeah, it is going to be great. I've got, in these groups, I'm going to say Cleveland comes out of A. I got, in B, I'm going to say Detroit, Philly. Where am I going to go with this one? All right, I'm going to go Detroit coming out of B. East, I'm going to go Knicks. I'll go Knicks. And then the wild card, I'm going to go with Philly in this wild card spot for the East. So that's Cleveland, Detroit, Philly, and New York. Looking at the groups, Dan, what are your picks here?
Well, I'm crunching the numbers here. Obviously, we're burning the midnight oil trying to get these prognostications correct. I'm pretty sure last year I said that the Kings were going to make a huge run. So, you know, take these for what they're worth. I think Cleveland makes the most sense coming out of A. I'm going to take Philly out of Group E. I just love the way they're playing. I think their offense with Tyrese Maxey and VJ Edgecombe, Quentin Grimes. We had a really good, you know, some good minutes for Embiid against the Wizards on Tuesday night. So I'm cautiously optimistic there. And then I just saw Giannis completely dismantle the Knicks on Tuesday night. So we'll take the Bucks out of Group C. And then, yeah, I'll take the Knicks as the wild card coming out of there in the East. But okay. One thing I do love in a small sample setup here, you have the potential for a team to make a surprising run. We've seen it in the East each of the last two seasons. The first iteration of the tournament was the Pacers kind of coming out party with Tyrese Haliburton. I don't think anybody had projected them to make it out of the group stage, let alone all the way to the finals. Last year, you had the Hawks, which I think people were really uncertain about what kind of team the Hawks were going to be. We didn't really know yet about Dyson Daniels' breakout, all those sorts of things. They take down Boston, Cleveland, and New York on the way to the knockout round. So in terms of who that could be this year, I think, am I crazy to be looking at Charlotte? Am I crazy to be looking at Washington? These teams that, like, are bad,
shoot your shot.
Bad teams.
Shoot your shot, Dan.
They're bad teams, but they're bad teams whose offenses can get hot. And if your offense can get hot in this sort of setting, you could wind up taking some games that take people by surprise and advancing. So, but yeah, I won't pick them to come out of it, but I wouldn't be shocked if either one of them did.
All right, West A. I'm going to go OKC. Kind of an easy choice for me there over the Utah Jazz, who are coming off to a great start this season.
Bad offense, yeah.
West B. I'm going to go Clippers over the Lakers, Pelicans, Mavs, and Grizzlies. West C. I'll go with Denver coming out of West C. And because they're playing each other, I don't think the wild card is going to be coming out of West C. I think there's going to be only one team out of West C between Houston, Denver, Golden State, Portland, and San Antonio. Because they're all facing each other, it's going to be a bloodbath. So I'm going to go outside of West C for my wild card pick, and I'm going Minnesota in West A. So West A will have OKC in Minnesota. Then I've got the Clippers coming out of West B. And then, yeah, Denver.
I was with you on Minnesota before the Ant Edwards injury, and the fact that we're going to see for a couple of weeks at least, it looks like Ant's going to be working his way back through that hamstring injury, and then we'll have to see what it looks like when he gets back from it. So, yeah, Oklahoma City, all they've done since coming off their title is just they've won five straight games without Jalen Williams, and A.J. Mitchell suddenly is looking like a star. So, yeah, the Thunder, not much to dislike there. Oh, we should also mention that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander continues to score like 40 points a night. Pretty good. Going on there in Oklahoma City. And B, to me, a lot of this, again, it's how quickly does Luka Doncic get back, and what does he look like when he does? Because if he just puts up 45 a night, throws up a heater, then that could change it. But yeah, the Clippers have probably played the best brand of ball all told of every team in that group. So we'll go Thunder A, Clippers B. I'm going to stick with the Warriors and C. I feel like we planted a flag pretty early on the Warriors looking like an absolute war rig here. And they've done nothing to dissuade me from that outside of that one loss to the Blazers. So we'll go with them. And then I hear what you're saying about the bloodbath of West C, meaning that we're probably not going to get a second team out of it. But, you know, just for fun, it's a Wemby episode. Let's go with San Antonio making it out of West C into the next round. And I'm sure the league wouldn't mind too much getting to promote Wemby into the next round of the playoffs, into the next round of the NBA Cup knockout rounds.
I've got Denver winning the whole thing over New York. I've got Denver over New York, Jokic and Jalen Brunson in Vegas for the wing. That's my pick. Dan, I know this is a crapshoot what we're doing here, but what's your pick? What you got?
You know what? You mentioned the champagne is an issue last year. I think the Thunder are going to wind up taking this one because I need to see how the Thunder have advanced in their opening up a bottle of champagne game. None of them could open up the bottles of champagne in the locker room after winning the finals. They've matured. They've had some more experience. They've had time to go back and review the film, you know, draw on the experience of the veteran leaders. I think they can do it this time. I expect the Thunder to continue to march through the league. And now I want to see them actually pop a couple of bottles after the process.
Can AJ Mitchell drink it legally? I don't know. How old is he these days?
I believe he was an older prospect when he came in. So I think so. And you know what? Just even if he doesn't have a ton of experience with champagne, just the poise, the command he's showing at this point, I feel like he's going to be able to figure it out, you know, no problems at all.
The Belgian born AJ Mitchell is 23 years old. So he, if he was in Brussels, he had been able to drink since he was 18, right? I don't know. So he's probably a seasoned veteran in that department. I don't know. I'm just making things up. I'm getting kind of loopy. I had a back-to-back this week that started at 10:30 at night. You know, Dan, the season just kind of like arrived and now I'm trying to get into it. So AJ is like well past drinking age.
That's fine.
Topic, what do we got? He's probably the youngest guy on the team. I don't know.
It's hard to tell. At this point, everybody on Oklahoma City is like 14 years old and incredible. So it's really hard to tell. The only thing that I would like to see, if my pick is wrong, and of course, if my pick is wrong, it would be heartbreaking and I'd be furious about it, is if the Cavs were to wind up making the run all the way through and winning, could the Cavalier open the champagne with a saber? Could we get saber, like the, you know, you've seen that like ka-cha, and then it, poof, I don't know that I want anyone else with a sword, but I would trust that mascot, I think. So, you know, if I can't get my pick, I at least want to see, I guess I want to see a mascot with a sword. I don't, that sounds weird now that I say it out loud, Tom.
I almost think that Wemby will just take a spur, like a literal spur, and do a saber bottle opening. You know, I wouldn't
just his hand. Just his hand. They're deadly weapons. Ka-cha! Ka-cha! Is that the sound it would make? I don't know.
Is it an alien that just has like a bottle opener, like contraption off of his like left pinky finger? I don't know. I wouldn't put it past Wemby. All right. This was a really fun big number. We're going to probably do Wemby every third episode at this rate, just because he's going to do stuff that's melting our minds. Want to give a shout out to Emmy and Sarah behind the team doing this brand new production here that is really, really helping out. So appreciate Emmy and Sarah for doing a bang up job there. The entire team, actually, behind the scenes helping us out here. That's going to do it for us today. Please watch The Big Number on YouTube. Subscribe to The Big Number wherever you get your podcast. Leave us a rating review. Remember, yahoosports.tv. Go check out all the shows that we have on the Yahoo Sports Network and wherever you watch on your fast channels. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Big Number. Until then, enjoy the Emirates NBA Cup.